Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for coming. Continuing in the vein that my colleague started, we're going to be talking about orphans and vulnerable children in Swaziland. So first, I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors on this project, Tegan Callahan and Laura Mitchell. And so I'll be looking at the culturally relevant exemplary model of care for OVCs in Swaziland with sustainability, caregiver support, and child health outcomes. I have no relationships to disclose, but this project was partially supported by the Health Economics HIV AIDS Research Division at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, and the Rotaract Club at University of Washington. So I'm going to go through the objectives of the project, the background in Swaziland, our methods, our results, conclusions, and then a call for future research. So in terms of the project objective, so this study was conducted by three researchers with previous experience working in Swaziland, and we worked as an interdisciplinary team incorporating disciplines of social work, education, child psychology, and public health to evaluate the multiple dimensions of this residential care facility. So what our task was really to document the structure and core components and create a case study of this residential care facility and how it addresses the needs of children left without any other alternatives to care in Swaziland. And this was really an internal program evaluation to assist the staff in sharing with interested stakeholders throughout Swaziland and the sub-Saharan African region. So the problem, the overwhelming number of orphans left without alternatives to care right now is estimated around 20,000 in Swaziland, and 70% of households are already caring for orphans, at least one orphan. Since 2000, 20 residential care facilities have been established, but without national guidelines or regulations for their procedures. And there's little research done on how those programs are working. So Swaziland is a small country in sub-Saharan Africa, surrounded by South Africa on three sides and Mozambique on one, has a population of 1 million, and the number of people living with HIV is around 190,000. The HIV prevalence is estimated to be around 26.1% in adults 15 to 49. And there are other estimates from antenatal care clinics that average HIV prevalence to be as high as 42.6%. Deaths due to AIDS are 10,000 a year. So the social context, like I said, 26 new residential care orphan homes opened from 2000 to 2004 in Swaziland. 10% of the population's orphaned from HIV-related causes, and 70% of households are already caring for orphans. So currently, the National Emergency Response Council on HIV/AIDS, which is the national governing council for the government of Swaziland, their policy is to support child-headed households and community-based care, but as you can see, 70% of households are already caring for a child. So we're seeing a gap with policy and then responses that are popping up, like these residential care facilities. So the case study was based on the Kailampilo Lincha, which is a project in English New Life Homes, and they focus on permanent placements for children. Right now there's four homes for children. They're caring for 32 children in settings of 8 to 10 children per home. They're located within a rural community and integrated within that community. The project is working towards a culture of self-sustainability. They're about 75% self-sustainable right now, and that's through farm operating income generating projects. They have a seedlings project, they raise pigs, they have chickens with layers, and working towards being able to sustain themselves without any donor support. And the caregivers are supported in parenting skills. They have parenting workshops once a week and then larger gatherings once a year. So New Life Homes began operation in 2001, and the culturally relevant aspects that I spoke of before really have to do with the moms are Swazi moms. They're teaching Swazi values to the kids. They're eating local foods. The language is spoken at home. They're integrated within a community, which means attending the schools, attending the churches, and then also part of the governing structure that's already built in, the chiefdoms. And so all of these are important aspects. So our methodology was mixed methods. We used quantitative and qualitative methods to evaluate the program. For quantitative, we used the Child Status Index, which was developed at Duke University for limited resource settings. And the Child Status Index has 12 domains, they're listed here, that measure child welfare in a very simplified form. So the Child Status Index was completed by the program director retrospectively according to the child files at intake, and then once again scored for the time of the program evaluation by the director and then also by the caregiver of the child. The scores were averaged together, and then we created a comparison measure between the child's intake scores and their current scores at the time of the evaluation. In addition, we completed 11 semi-structured in-depth interviews with staff and key stakeholders, including all of the caregivers, the staff workers that work on the farm, board members, and two pediatricians that treat the children. And grounded theory approach was used to establish coding for our themes. So this is our conceptual model before the analysis took place. So as you can see, high HIV prevalence, poverty, loss of caregivers all create the erosion of social network support, which leaves children without other alternatives to care. And so New Life Homes is the impact mediation program, and that gives permanent home, a stable caregiver, homestead responsibilities, and exposure to income generation and farm production, which filter through to all of these mediating factors that therefore come out to the outcome of good overall child health and well-being. So that's what we started with. It evolved a little bit after the evaluation into really looking at three main aspects of how this shook out. So we looked at sustainability, caregiver training and support, and the conditions that the children thrive in. So we were looking at what pieces are most essential to this project and what pieces are most essential for replication of this project. So now I'm going to share a little bit about our findings. So our evaluation questions, like I said, were based on these three main topics of positive outcomes for children, caregiver training and support, and sustainability. So the first question that we had was, do children improve in the child well-being domains of the Child Status Index after enrollment at Lakayla and Pilo Lencha? So as you can see here from the results, that in the gray bar is the average Child Status Index score at the intake. And once again, it was done retrospectively. And then the black is the average Child Status Index score last year at the program evaluation time. So you can see that overall, in all of the domains, there was vast improvement for the children. And there were six domains that automatically structurally improved with the children, just by being at a facility where they were getting regular food and nutrition, having shelter and care. So those automatically went up. And then there were five domains where we don't actually know if they'll ever reach 100% because so much of that was impacted by previous trauma. So the emotional health, the social behavior, and the performance, while they did all show improvements from the time of intake to the current score, we don't know if it'll ever be able to reach 100%. And then there were three domains which it was impossible to measure at intake: education and work, legal protection, and health services, because it may have been available to the children before they came, but they don't have recollection of it, and there wasn't any documentation of that. So one thing about the Child Status Index is that it's now been incorporated into the policies of this organization, and so they do it with all the children at intakes, and they continue to do it at yearly evaluations to measure their progress. So the second question for our evaluation was under caregiver training and support, and does Lakayla and Pilo Lencha training to caregivers increase their capacity to care for vulnerable children? So this was a key unique aspect that we thought the program brought. So this is a quote from the caregiver. I'd like to read it. The teachings they contribute. Let's say maybe you are starting. There's no training. You are not having anything. You are empty. Because there are trainings, maybe once a week, and it's just encouragement. So it's not like dumping the children and leaving the maid there and go like other places do. So you can hear in her own language that she's describing differences between this project and other orphan care projects that she's seen in similar settings. And she's also saying personally how important they've been for her to receive these weekly trainings on caregiving and child psychology. The next question has to do with caregiver training and support, and that was, do caregivers report a sense of support in their role at Lakaila and Pilo Lenca? So one unique aspect of this is the very low turnover rate that this project has with their caregivers. So we wanted to look at what were the unique aspects of that. So once again, a caregiver says, I do get support, I can feel it myself. Although I'm not someone who can easily talk out things, although they show that they are willing to give support whenever. Also the mothers, they also support me. Now I have stayed a long time with them and they understand my weakness, so I feel they also help me. I'm getting more support than I expected. And this caregiver is not only talking about the support that she's received from the program directors through these trainings, but she's also talking about the community of living within a group of mothers that are caring for children together. And so I think that this was something that she brought out that we hadn't anticipated, but the support that she felt. And that is very a close replication of how you live within an extended family in the Swaziland environment to raise children. So the next aspect of our evaluation was on the sustainability of the project. So like I had mentioned, this project is working towards a culture of self-sustainability. So what we asked was, what are the key factors contributing to the sustainability of the Lakaila and Pilo Lenca project? And a quote from one of the board members that locally serves in Swaziland is, in the short time we've been operational, we are almost self-sufficient. I mean, a lot of people don't even know that New Life Homes exists, which to an extent is bad. But the reason they don't do that is because we don't go around begging for help and stuff like that. We are helping ourselves. So you can see an inbuilt sense of pride in that, and then also a reliance on themselves that will be able to sustain donor whims and such. So the last question on sustainability, what are the successes and challenges of the project as perceived by the staff and caregivers, identified four key successes and two challenges within our coding framework. So the successes that came out were themes of mentorship, humanity, community impact, and ownership. And the two key challenges that came out were also ownership and interpersonal issues. So I'll share some of these findings. So in relation to mentorship, a staff person that works on the farm said, I think I have a great responsibility to them, meaning the children. When they see me, they say something like a relative, maybe father, uncle, or buti, or whatever they can call me at that time. So you know you make a difference in their life. So you can see this is somebody who actually comes and works in the fields on the farm for the income generation projects, but that he holds a very personal responsibility toward mentoring the children and having a relationship with the children at the farm. So another success in regards to sustainability is identified by a caregiver, and this was a surprising theme that came up, so we coded it humanity. And here she says, here, it's different from other orphanages because Mage Kopp, which is the director, I remember the first day I met her, she said, I was free to come with my own child. So that way I think it's good because in other orphanages, I understand that they just need the mother, not the child. So in this case, she's really pulling out the example that she's identified as a person that's working there, not just an employee, but that she's seen as a whole person. She brings her child to live with her on the project as well. So we're not, you know, they're not creating more orphans by taking caregivers away for their employment. So in this case, it was really a sense, and this was a theme that came up over and over again, that she's recognized as a person that contributes. And the third success was community impact. And the director says, and by extension, I suppose, the community feels that the kids are more part of them as well through the interaction they get from the staff when they get back into the community. So this was a part of how the orphan care project is actually situated within a rural community, integrated into their structure, and the all of the staff and the workers come from the local community. And so it's really a reciprocal process that the produce that is produced at the project is then sold and benefits the community, and then the community comes back with workers, and they have a very integrated process into the community itself, which is an important aspect in Swaziland. The last success that I'll talk about in terms of sustainability is ownership. And one caregiver said, New Life Homes is different. Our organization is different because we are just working on the farm. We don't depend on donors. We do have our income, our own income, to raise up the children. Donors can just go. We can also stand on our own because we have got this income generation ourselves, the chickens, pigs, even in the fields. And this was a really, really strong statement that came out of the program evaluation because it's a lot of work, obviously, for the caregivers to be doing all of these income generation projects on top of caring for 8 to 10 children. And but you can see that it was very important and essential to her and the success of this program. So on to the challenges. In regards to sustainability, there were two things that came up. First was interpersonal issues. The hardest thing, but it's not so hard actually, is just like misunderstandings with other people, you see. Maybe if you come with a good idea, I won't like it that you come with an idea. So this was a staff person, and when we came to do the program evaluation, the directors were actually in a process of transitioning out of the role of directors and finding a way to delineate the leadership among the staff. And so there was no hierarchy in the relationships, and they were trying to work on a cooperative model for making decisions about marketing and selling the produce and how to care for the children and when school problems come up, what to do. And so we can see some of these things coming up and, you know, anywhere that you work. And the last challenge in sustainability was also ownership. And this is what a caregiver said. We could have some problems financially and with the market for our produce. And she's talking about the transition if the directors leave and they take over all of the aspects of running the farm. Because we are able to produce a lot from the farm, but we must also find a market. He, the program director, helps us a lot in finding, both of them, both program directors, in finding a market. That is the problems I see that we could come across. So you can see that within the aspects of owning the project and being independent from donor support, there was also some problems that would have to be come across, such as finding a new market and really balancing the home life of taking care of 8 to 10 children, and then growing income generation in different ways and finding ways to market that. So, in conclusion, the Kyle and Pila Lincha offers a model of excellence for providing care for children left without any alternatives to care. And the key unique aspects that we found in this program evaluation, which turned into a case study model, was caregiver training and support, sustainability, and child health outcomes. So, of course, this is a case study, so there's much need for further research, including replicability. Will this work in other settings? Will this work in other environments? The importance of caregiver continuity on adherence for HIV-infected OVCs. So about a third of the children that served at this farm were HIV-infected, and our interviews produced some qualitative findings that the pediatricians noted how much higher the adherence was, but we didn't have a comparison with another, so I wasn't able to report the results, but there are some preliminary findings that adherence is much higher. And that long-term impact of caregiver trainings on sustainability and child health outcomes. So how does that work, and what happens over a long-term period for that? So we know this is a model of excellence for these 30 kids, but we don't know the scalability of it versus the current government policy of funding child-headed households in Swaziland. So thank you.
We can take just a few minutes for questions. I unfortunately mistimed that one. It was okay. A little long, but let's take two to three minutes for questions, and then we'll move on.
Yes. Get one over. I have just a question about you presented back towards the beginning about an index for child outcomes, such as child health.
Yes.
And I was just wondering that you had sort of at the beginning, at a time period one, and then you had at a second time period. How did you account for just age effects? Because I would imagine the level of, like, one was emotional development or something like that. Would that be different in a younger child versus as a child gets older? And how did you deal with age?
That's a good question. So the question was, how did we control for age in the variation between the two scores in the child status index, and if age could have been a factor for any of the improvements? it's kind of built into the measure as is itself, and so there's different developmental ways that you ask the questions based on their age. And so that's pretty much controlled for in the way that asked. And then also, I think I mentioned six measures are automatically, they're structural measures. So they're about nutrition and security and shelter. And so those measures don't vary with age because they're structural. So yeah, thanks. It's called the Child Status Index.
That was actually developed at my center, so yeah. I can say this a little thing. It was developed by a child psychologist. She was very... What? I'm sorry. That was developed at my center by a child psychologist named Karen O'Donnell. And she thought about the developmental possibilities and how age might affect that. And she did, as she said, built that into the whole thing. So that would not be an issue to have to control.